All right, welcome to Return on Podcast, where we talk about the experiences, the obsessions, and the habits of the most successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Tyler Jeffcoat. I want to welcome you to this episode of ROP. One of the common questions that I get in my CFO practice here at Seller Accountant is, Tyler, listen, how can I improve or increase the value of my brand, of my company? I want to command a premium either when I sell my company down the line or even in the eyes of my customers now. I want to be able to charge more. I want my customers to see more value in what I'm offering them. Tyler, how do I do that? And today I want to talk about one of the core things that you can do to improve that, which is actually literally the brand itself. I'm going to bring in my friend Kate here. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me, Tyler. I appreciate it.
Liz, I'm going to let you give a little bit more context, but let me give it the old college try of introducing
you. Okay. All right.
Kate is great, by the way. Kate is a friend of a friend. We've connected on so many levels. I really have enjoyed your friendship. You're an author, but you're a brand architect. So if somebody is trying to figure out, how do I build the essence of my offering in a way that's going to get more of the right attention from the right customers? Kate might be your girl to help you do that. You've also written a book here recently called, Muting the Megaphone. It's funny. I can't wait to read this. By the way, I bought it. I've bought this book, Kate. It's not arrived yet. So Muting the Megaphone, Stop Telling Stories and Start Having Conversations. Did I say that right?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I was so worried there for a minute. I might have gotten it wrong. But Kate, listen, you describe yourself as being an accidental brand strategist. I would even augment that to say an accidental leading brand strategist. Would you tell us how that happened?
Sure. Okay. So if you're listening in today, by the way, and you're like, I have no idea how I got where I am today. Congratulations. I'm right there with you. I think, by the way, I'm 36, almost 37. I'm exhausted. I have four young children. I always say that. I'm like, when I'm not in my day job of doing branding, I go home to four children who are like, it's constant. Yeah, right. I'm right there with you, my friends, with all of the kids and the craziness at home. But like many of you that might be listening, I definitely stumbled my way into what I'm currently doing. So when I graduated, this was back in 2007, 2008, when the market crashed. And so here I was, Tyler, at the time. What was weird is, me being a total nerd, I had planned to do a PhD in linguistic anthropology, which, by the way, super bougie, right? I totally thought, I'm going to study and I want to be a professor and teach people how language shapes culture and how culture shapes language. Market crashes, and I have a professor who's about to start all of my graduate studies. And he looks at me and says, hey, we love you, but we do not know where this field is going to be, let alone if there's going to be some crazy, amazing position for you at a university in the United States in the next 10 years. You should probably leave academia, go get a job, pay after school debt, and then revisit this at a later date. So of course, my Italian father, please leave my house. Please go get a job and leave my house, right? So I actually started off in sales, Tyler. Whole career and my love for brand not only hinged upon that background with linguistic anthropology, but honestly, I recognize the power of brand because I took a job cold calling IT professionals to sell them training classes. Dumbest job you can take, right? IT people love to be called and they love to be sold to. And here I was in this job in my 20s, and I had to figure out how to smile and dial and meet my numbers and get these folks to want to have a conversation with me. And nothing was working, and I was going to be out of a job. And so, Tyler, all that complex sales scripting, all of the email marketing campaigns, it was junk. So I decided that I was going to be a total problem child, and I was going to throw out their stuff, and I was going to do it my way because I actually had nothing to lose at that point. So I basically thought, you know what, if I'm the customer right now, if I'm the person on the phone here, what would I want to know to actually want to talk with somebody like me? And I decided to just boil it down and get to the point. I thought, you know what, if I can tell them in 15, 20 seconds, this is what I do, this is how I solve your problem, and this is how I'm different. By the way, that's what you call a brand pitch.
Yep.
Maybe they're going to want to stay on the phone with me, email me back. It worked. I ended up running a successful $1.2 million a year quota and making that and having millions and millions in pipeline that I managed. And I ended up getting recruited out. So I actually had a marketing agency hire me out. They're like, we love what you're doing over here. Can you come write this brand pitch stuff for some of our clients while we're doing other work? So that was the beginning for me, Tyler. I started working in agency world and then corporate America. And for about, I would say 8 or 9 years of that time, my business was a side hustle. I was just building brands on the side for people. And then in 2019, I did go full time with this, but up until now, I've worked with almost 300 companies globally. Most of them are technology based or have a technology or e-com component. And I've really been hell-bent on how do we help them build a brand message that's going to enable them to win more work.
Okay, and that actually might be the best next question here is, how do you build a brand message that helps them win more work?
Sure, let's get into it, right? Like, I'm a total pragmatist. Like, when we talk about brand, I think also it's important to acknowledge, like, in this world of marketing, that sounds so fluffy and nebulous, right? And like, who cares, right? But actually, at its core, when you ask the question, like, what is a brand? Your brand is your promise of what you say your customer is supposed to experience or receive from you, what value they get when they interact with you, your products, or your services. And so at the core, there's three big components in messaging or sales language that somebody needs to have at the front to capture that audience and get them to go, okay, I want to click and shop. I want to take that next step. I want to fill out the form, watch the video, whatever it is. Okay. In order to get your person to convert, you have to create a brand conversation that gets them there in 20 seconds. There's three things. Number one is a tagline that answers the question, what do you do? Number two is a value proposition statement, which is a big, bougie, fluffy marketing statement that basically says, here's the pain or problem you have. Here's how we solve that problem. And then the third thing is what we call differentiator statements, sometimes called like your 1, 2, 3 uniques. For example, but it's really the 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 big bullets of how your company is different and better than the rest. So tell me what you do. Tell me how you solve my problem. Tell me how you're different. That's the stuff, Tyler, based on buyer psychology, that's going to get that buyer to go, yep, you get me. I love this. I'm ready to go look at stuff for them.
I mean, what's so powerful about this, Kate, is that I do think we can be either paralyzed by being overwhelmed by saying, yeah, I really want to build a great brand, but I don't know practically how to do it. Or maybe we can either become so in love with our story, right, that it becomes more about us. I think I actually saw this in some of your content. I was like, oh no, you don't want to have a brand that tells your story. You want to have a brand that tells someone else's story. And that makes sense. So help me bring this in. So somebody's a kind of an average e-commerce related brand owner, and they're, what are they feeling right now where they may need to make a change in the way they're approaching their brand? Like, what mistakes they're making?
That's a great question. Okay, so often there's some symptoms, right? So there's some symptoms, and then you go as a business owner or a marketing or sales leader where you're like, we need to go look at our brand message. All right, the symptoms being in B2B services, for example, oh my God, our sales cycle is so long. It takes us like 3 to 6 months to close a deal. Kate, we're really struggling to get prospects to the table. Gosh, Kate, I'm even struggling to get conversions right now on my website. Hey, I'm seeing a huge drop off on core pages. Mm-hmm. Like, I had the ad worked and they get to the homepage and then they drop. Or, hey, why am I having shopping cart abandonment issues? Or they say things like, we have a new product and segment to the market we're trying to go after. We have no idea how to talk about that one versus how we've done a really good job over here. Okay, those are all situations where thinking, you need to go back to your messaging and you need to kind of take a look at your brand from a couple points and say, okay, hold on. Who are we trying to talk to and why? Who is that ideal customer, right, for our various products or services? And then what is the message that we're saying? Do we have a message that actually speaks to the heart pain we solve for them?
That's really well said. It's one of those things, by the way, Kate, that sounds really simple, but also maybe not very easy as like a left brain finance guy. I'm like, oh yeah. I was like, yeah, I want to resonate with what their felt heart pain is. And I'm like, wait a second. I can't even do that in my marriage very well. Like, how many you know what I mean? So, okay. So what is one area that brand builders should be spending more of their energy on right now that you're, I don't know, I'm just broad question, but where should we be spending more of our energy that might give us return?
Okay. I think it's a big question. I'll try and answer this maybe in a few ways if I could, because there's a couple
of
ways you could approach this. All right. So I think at a first point, you hit on this a minute ago. I think that in general, as companies and as leaders, we need to move away from storytelling. I'm an anti-storyteller. Like, my whole book is called Stop Telling Stories and Start Having Conversations with Your Brand, right?
Okay.
And if you've heard of this guy, Donald Miller, mm-hmm. who came out with this concept of story brand. Okay, listen, Donald Miller was brilliant. He did a great job, right? His whole concept of putting the customer at the heart of your entire story, making them the hero, making it all about them, brilliant. The problem is we took that, this idea of storytelling, and we ran with it. We made it all about us. So we have all these companies out there thinking they're doing storytelling, and it's storytelling of the wrong flavor.
Oh, no.
Here's the thing. Storytelling is not very compelling when you get to the heart of it. You know why? You have one person talking and one person listening. How is it supposed to compel our buyer? The method that I teach that I want you to think about is, how do you create a conversation with your brand that actually converts? Well, the secret to that is going back to what I said earlier with a few key components that are layered in the right order. It's a formulaic process, by the way. If you like formulas, I love formulas. It's 1 + 2 + 3 equals point of conversion. And when you layer these sentences correctly and you allow them to be provocative, what you've done is, after they read or they hear each sentence or statement, you're actually allowing your prospect, whether they're on your website or they're in the Zoom room with you, to ask the next question. Really, what do they mean by that? Oh, hold on, that's interesting. Wait a second. When you start getting that type of mental response from somebody as they're reading or as they're talking with you, you've created a brand conversation. And that's what I want us to think about. Are you just shouting like a megaphone with all of your features and benefits and colors and pricing and options and sales and you've ever been on the other side of that? What happens? You're like,
Yeah,
it's
back
just
off.
This inundation of noise,
right? It's so true. It's so true. And so, because I actually get that, because I actually love Donald Miller's work like you do. And I can see how one of the many ways that we take great thought leadership and kind of bastardize it is that we internal was a really cool idea and make it about us instead of about actually having a dialogue. Okay. So if I'm a brand, you know, again, a lot of the brands that are going to listen to this podcast are selling some kind of a physical product. I'm selling the blue one. I'm selling it on my Shopify site and on, and maybe on Amazon or something like that. And if I wanted to take a couple of concrete steps toward having more of a dialogue or conversational relationship with my key core customer, can you help me bridge that gap a little bit? What does that look like?
All right. Can I be super blunt with you? I used to build websites in a former life, and I love talking about website theory too. Now, by the way, have you noticed how we went into the days of sales funnel pages galore that are like 16 miles long, and now we're finally going back to the core of more simple to the point website pages? Hallelujah. I love it. Okay. So here's the thing. If you have 5 calls to action on your homepage, something's wrong. That's a lot of calls to action. Ultimately, if you're trying to sell products on your website or even in B2B services and you have like, I want them to fill the form to set up a demo or get on a call with me, right?
Right.
If that's what you want, simple step, shop and buy or contact me. Here's the thing. On the homepage of your website, that is your prominent sales real estate. This is where your brand goes. And when we think about a website page, you have this real estate, what we call above the fold of the page, right? Before you have to start to scroll. Okay. Now, I've seen the coolest ones with flashy imagery and live videos and all these things, and that's great. But what has to be there is right below your logo is a big, bold tagline. And then I also need to see your value proposition statement. You guys, if you are burying that information on other pages or it's way far down before they start to shop, you're losing people. People are not ready to buy yet until that you tell them what you do, how you solve their problem, and how you're different. That's okay. Mm-hmm. The job of your brand is to get there as quickly as possible. So when we actually go to website page, Tyler, I always am recommending get that value prop and tagline right there, front and center, as fast as you can. And then when people start to scroll in that first set of white space, get your differentiators. Then move into the shopping cart. Okay. Then move into your categories and all the other things, but not until you can answer those questions.
I feel like that's actually really instructive because I think those questions, the 1, 2, 3 of the tagline is kind of like, what do you do? And then the value proposition, what define that one again, the value proposition is you're saying it is what?
It's saying, this is the pain I know you're experiencing and this is how we solve that pain. Can I give you a great example of a brand who does this?
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So if you've ever checked out, there's this group called the Beard Club. Have you heard of them?
I feel like I've heard of them.
I don't have a beard.
No, you don't.
However, my friends have beards and I've looked at this company, the Beard Club, thebeardclub.com. You go right to their website, discover your best beard. That's their tagline. They help you discover your best beard. Boom, it's right there. And then right below it, they've got a call to action, a really nice value prop that's super simple. And it says, say goodbye to your beard issues and unlock a free item. Boom. They're telling you exactly the value of what you get, you're paying, right? They got it. It's right there at the top of the page. It didn't overwhelm all their beautiful photography. And I was like, I'm compelled to scroll, and away they go right on down.
That's so good. I'm even thinking about this could probably apply even to a kind of a finite listing situation, like a, for instance, like an Amazon listing where your headline photo in that first infographic or those first couple of bullet points or the kinds of words that you choose to bake into your title are so crucial because they need to, and that maybe that was one actually thing that I took away from Donald Miller's book that I think is still instructive here, is to actually take the time to unpack who your customer is and even answer that question. What is that emotional heartfelt pain point that,
You're so spot on, Tyler. In fact, when I work with clients, we spend an entire one or two sessions on that. They're like, really, Kate, we're going into these. Yes, we are, my friends, so that we can come back up and out of them, write your brand. But honestly, I think we take for granted a couple big things when we think about selling our products. Okay. Number one, we believe, well, technically speaking, everybody could use us and want us and love us and buy from us, right? My product serves everybody. Yes. But is everybody going to buy it? No.
Right.
So hold on. The trajectory of growing your company and candidly talking about revenue generation here, let's be real. Your bottom line and your top line are directly hinged upon your ability to niche in and do a fantastic job serving one or two, maybe three groups of people very well. And if you do a really good job with a brand that speaks to those small audiences or specific audiences, as your revenue share grows, you can expand market share and who you're going after with secondary, third messages. And I'll tell you who did the best job at this: Facebook.
Oh.
Okay. Back in the glory days, when I was in college, 2004, freshman year, I'm like dating myself right now. Okay, freshman year of college, 2004, at the University of Minnesota. We were one of the first universities, they picked like their top 1,500 universities, I think it was around that number, around the country, to be like the inaugural class to sign up for Facebook. Prior to that, by the way, it was only like, I think at Harvard and then East Coast schools, they tested it, they baited it, and then they rolled it. Okay, so when we got on Facebook, you had to have a .edu email to even get onto Facebook. I don't think a lot of people remember this. Then, much to my dismay, a couple years later, my mother shows up on Facebook. They had expanded the pie because they did so well in schools.
Yep.
Then they expanded the pie again by knocking the age barrier down. See, Facebook knew that if they could do so well with building a reputation and getting as many people over here to buy, others are going to start to want them. And when that demand starts to build with your brand, then you build that message and marketing to those groups.
I love it. And if you think about this, like the genius of this is, first of all, what you said is objectively true. I cannot be all things to all people. Right. I'm going to have to get focused. But the sweet benefit of choosing to get focused is that if I can address my customer, whatever her needs are, perfectly, if I can address all of her anxiety points, I actually get the privilege of charging a premium for my product.
Right.
Because, and here's a real concrete example. I was leading my mastermind at a live retreat this weekend, and we were doing a game called Shred the Listing. So we would put someone's product up on the screen. We're all kind of experts. We're like, oh, we like this bullet point. Oh, this is a little confusing. And we would unbox the product if they brought it, that kind of thing. And we looked at one product, and one of the guys was like, listen, if you just made it a little bit clearer that you're selling this wheel for this exact model of lawnmower, I would pay twice as much for it because it's such a pain in the ass to go buy it twice when you get the wrong model. And so that's just one micro example of, don't forget that, by the way, there are real people buying your products from your website or from the marketplace. And another example, by the way, this is, I'm just thinking about, you're talking about school. My favorite professor in the MBA program at Georgia used to own a big, like a painting company. And he decided, for whatever reason, that he was going to get so niche. He believed, he's the one that taught me the phrase, there are riches and niches, right? Let's get really niche.
Yes, sir.
And he said, we're going to go after early 40s, women in Atlanta that are recently divorced.
Oh my God. He must have made millions with that audience.
And so he engineered his entire offering around, she's feeling a new sense of freedom in her life and she wants to spring clean. She doesn't want dudes going to the bathroom in her house. She wants it's a very specific experience. And what he found is if I engineer around her, I get everyone else also, right? Because I've created an avatar that is so clean. And I just think maybe that's a worthy thought experiment for anyone who's listening to this episode is, for my offering, for my product, what is the absolute best customer? Meaning the person who should convert 100% of the time because it solves the entire problem for them and they feel like they're glowing and they can't wait to spend more money with your product. probably going deeper and making it clear for more of her or for him is actually going to get you farther faster than trying to be everything to everybody.
I agree. And it's funny because I teach an entire workshop on this. I call it how to refine your Rolodex, right? Mm-hmm. Does anybody know what a Rolodex is? Remember back in the glory days where you had to keep your contacts, your business cards? All right. If I'm speaking to a Gen Z, they're like, we have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. So there's some certain questions too that I ask people to think about when they're refining your target audiences. Who is the most fun and easy to work with? Who's most aligned with your culture? What buyers are most aligned with your culture? Who's going to become your biggest raving fans? Who sees the highest value in what you offer? Who knows they can't get it done on their own? Who's willing to pay to have their pain solved? By the way, who's the fastest decision maker? Who makes the best and fastest decisions? Who's really a repeat or happy customer, always keeps coming back? Who's the type of customer that would refer all their friends to come and buy from you? You know, when you think about that, you begin to even narrow within a selection. This is really, even in B2B or B2C, if you're selling in e-com, this is about prospecting smarter, not harder. And when we actually think about where your marketing dollars go, if your people are not on Facebook, stop running Facebook ads. Yep. If your people are on Instagram, but only in these three groups, get there. If influencer is where you're supposed to get, and that's where you're getting traction, go there. But it's really about getting surgical, and you cannot get surgical with your marketing spend and even your sales team's efforts if you don't know who you're going after and why.
Well, this is so crucial right now, Kate. I was actually talking to a friend last week about how competitive, even PPC, like bids are up a lot in several categories.
Crazy right now, yes.
And so if you're just trying to continue bloodying the waters, paying at twice the cost per click for the same keyword or for the same, you're going to find that's a losing battle. And so one way to get more nuanced, I think, is what you're saying there, Kate, which is if I can just understand a little bit better the best, the 80-20, what are the 20% of my prospects that really generate most of the value? And I just think this is really wise. And by the way, so all those questions that Kate just asked, you should ask yourself and you should go back, rewind this, listen to it again and type those out and think about them. But if you're looking for a way to more algorithmically answer those questions and you're an e-com product seller, I just want to recommend having your VA or doing this yourself, scrape all of the reviews that you've ever had on your products.
Excellent. Yep.
Put them into a Google Doc. Actually, I would say put them into two Google Docs, one for smiley face reviews and one for frowny face reviews. And then use one of these online free word cloud kind of tools to tease out what the themes are. And then I would do the exact same exercise for your top three competitors. What are the things that my, because you're going to get a sense, because by the way, somebody who would go and willingly leave a 5-star review is somebody who is probably pretty happy with the purchase.
Yes.
What are the, and so you're going to be kind of surprised to be like, oh my gosh, I realized that I'm not selling to a 42-year-old woman recently divorced. I'm selling to a college guy. I don't know. This would be really helpful information because then you can orient your keywords and your spend and your content and even the kind of influencers you hire specifically around that target customer.
And I think what that enables you to do is when you understand who you want to purchase from you, you have choice. Here's what I want to always remember. You are not in the business of convincing. You're in the business of converting. It is not your job to convince everybody in the world to buy from you. It is your job as a business, as an organization, to grow revenue quite strategically for you and your investors by systematically speaking to and solving the problem of one or two or maybe three groups of people who have the highest pain that directly resonates with the message that you served up. That is a win-win. And here's the thing. When you target that in, you will find not only top of funnel impact, but bottom of funnel impact. This is where we start to see startups who do really well go from just focusing on get more sales to we've built an entire customer success department. And now we're looking at churn. We're looking at interesting questions around experience and how do you make a better buying experience? And then looking at the technology and shopping cart platform to make that even more robust and beautiful. See, when you actually hone in on that and you keep that front and center, all of a sudden, it's not just about sales, is it? It's about the entire journey. And that's what gets really exciting because you begin to build lifelong value-adding customers that impact your bottom line. How much is it costing you to not know exactly who you're going after? Yeah. What revenues are you actually losing because you don't understand what your customer needs after the first sale?
That's right. It's funny you mentioned this because I was talking to somebody about this last week where some of our like products we buy online, we wouldn't view them as being repeat customers, but I actually think that's false. I think if you get in front of your ideal customer, and the example I used is I'm a product evangelist with my friends. If you sell me something that I love, I'm going to turn around and buy four of them, or these are mm-hmm. going to become the Christmas presents. Like, my kid loves the game, I'm going to buy it for my nieces and nephews. And so I think, again, being strategic is, if I can spend my precious ad dollars to attract Tyler, who, when he resonates with my product, is going to buy five of them because he loves his nieces and nephews, versus some other guy down the street who's only going to buy one. And he's like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. Again, it's just another way of you and I are articulating a very practical outflow of the 80-20 principle. We have to get focused so that we get as much impact as we can get from each dollar we invest in the company. Anything else about like branding or brand building before we pivot to something fun here, Kate? Anything that you'd be like a final thought for if you hear nothing else that I say, think about your brand with this.
Here's the two things. Number one, know who the heck you're going after and why, and nail that sucker down. Number two, I want to make sure that you are really focusing on, do I have a brand message, the 1, 2, 3 of a tagline that says what I do, a value proposition statement that says how I solve your problem, and the differentiator statements that say 1, 2, 3, how I'm different and better than the rest. If you have those things in place and you have them as far up that homepage as possible, I can guarantee you you're going to see a direct impact on sales and revenue.
Beautiful. And so again, like, you impact on sales and revenue ends up resulting in impact, not just in higher conversions, but higher juice with the algorithm if you're trying to get SEO.
Absolutely.
So this is great advice. All right. Listen, we can't just talk about business, Kate. I want to talk about something fun. And I always ask, like, you booked this podcast and I was like, what do you do for hobbies? And you said scuba diving. And I laugh because you live in Minnesota. So let me just tell you here.
We're landlocked in, okay, can I just tell you, A, based on my hobbies, and B, based on my personalities, I stick out like a sore thumb here, right? I'm in the land of passive aggressive in the Midwest. God bless them. Minnesota, nice. And I am a type A Italian that should belong in New York, East or West Coast, right? I'm in the wrong place. And it's hilarious every day. I just realized that. Scuba diving, my husband got me into scuba diving. He said, hey, you're going to Hawaii with a girlfriend. Why don't you try one of those intro scuba classes? So I tried it. I was deathly afraid. I get down there and I was going, this is the most calming experience I have ever had. And for somebody with my energy, it's the anti-adrenaline rush. Like, I get out of scuba diving and I'm like, zen. I am zen for days. So we have scuba dived quite a few places around the world. And actually a few weeks ago, we went down to Roatan, Honduras, and we did 15 dives in a week. We went shark diving, swam with the sea turtles and dove with them, did a night dive in the pitch black and saw octopus and all sorts of things. It was so cool. So for me, that is my big passion.
I love it. And by the way, I've been scuba diving exactly once, and I learned on that trip that scuba diving is fun, but I also learned that I am very motion sickness on boats.
Not for the faint of stomach.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I felt like as a kid, I could always do like the roller coasters and stuff. As an adult, I don't know. I don't feel great about it, Kate.
But that's like people, they're like, Kate, just go skiing. You'll love it. I'm like, no, me going down a mountain from a hot, large height is just me telling myself, don't die, don't die, don't die the entire time. It is not, I don't care what equipment I bought. I spent thousands on equipment. I still had the same sentiment the entire time going down the hill.
Love it. Kate, it's pitch time. So you have a great website that is conveniently your name, KateDeLeo.com, KateDeLeo.com. What is the person feeling? Actually, let me just ask you this way. Give us your 1, 2, 3, and then help us remember which one's which real quick so that we know who needs to contact you.
Sure. My tagline is building brands that win more work. Love it. My value prop is business is a conversation and not a transaction, but many companies struggle to create conversations that convert. Create a message that gets more of the right prospects at the right table at the right time. And then differentiators, I go through them, singular focus, actionable tactics, educational approach, transparent pricing, boom, 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 boom. Here's the thing. If you are sitting here today and you're struggling to articulate and take the 35 ways of how you think and talk about your business and your products, you're like, I don't know how to boil that down. I don't know how to build that 1, 2, 3. We know that we want to do more. We know we've got the raw stuff here, okay, but we aren't sure how to wordsmith that. I really would recommend, first off, you could actually go to my website and check out my book. It is available on Amazon.com. And that's a great $15 or $20 to be able to just actually learn practically how you do this, okay? It's Tactical Practical Brand Guide. It's 100 pages. Get the highlighter out. I walk you through the formula and I teach you how to actually write the sentences. But at that point, if you're just like, I don't know how to do this, I don't have time to do this, get a hold of me. Feel free to contact me if you want to have a conversation.
Beautiful. So if that pitch resonated, guys, I think, and so many brands it will, by the way, Kate, I think, first of all, a no-brainer. I love this. If you can ever show me a solution to my problem that cost me $15, I'm always happy about that. So I've actually, I have already bought the book, Muting the Megaphone, Stop Telling Stories and Start Having Conversations, as soon as it goes live here in the next literally couple of weeks. I can't wait to get my copy. And then I think for any of you guys that hear this and are like, wow, I really need help smithing or dialing in my message so that I'm not shouting at my prospective customer, but I actually know what she looks like and I'm having a conversation with her, Kate may be a good partner for you to explore. So Kate, before we close the show here, we end every episode with this. We call it the Return on Podcast. We want to, if somebody's made it 30 minutes into this show, we want to guarantee them a return on the podcast. And one of the easy ways to do that is to give them a habit, a hack, a practice, personal, professional that has given you and me, as the kind of people on the show, the most success, the most return on our investments. It's a broad question, but is there anything that you do weekly or daily or that you're like, man, if you take nothing else away, try this, read this, measure this, track this, and you'll get a big ROI. What pops in your head when I say that?
Of course, I'm going to tell you, go get your message nailed down, right? But I think the thing is, Tyler, there is this principle of being confident enough in your expertise and your genius, being confident enough every day to wake up and remember, I am not in the business of convincing. I am in the business of converting. And if you can stand on that, you're going to find that you have a direct impact on your joy, on your top line revenue, on your bottom line, and everything in the between of how you run and operate your business.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's awesome. Conviction. I was talking to some private equity guys last year and I was like, what is the most attractive thing about an owner you might acquire the business? They said conviction of growth. And so knowing that you have what it takes, believing that your service or your product really is the best, and then starting from that place is such a great idea. So that's awesome, Kate. Okay. Kate, you're amazing. Thank you for joining.
Thank you. You are too, Tyler. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Absolutely. So KateDeLeo.com. You're going to want to go to Amazon and buy Muting the Megaphone, Stop Telling Stories and Start Having Conversations, so that you can be walked step by step through how to really engineer those three key points from Kate. Some of you are going to read it and be like, oh boy, I actually needed an expert to help me do this. You're going to call Kate. She's going to help you. So Kate, again, you're awesome. Really grateful for our friendship. Hope that you and your side hustle of being a consultant after you wrangle four kids and a husband, I hope you continue to do well there.
Thank you so much, Tyler. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, with that, guys, we're going to end this episode of Return on Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Your time is so valuable and we view this as a gift. We hope that you grab something from this episode that'll make you more money, more successful, more joyful in your life. Until next time, take care.